98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. Brought to you by Collins Comfort Masters, proud home services partner of the Arizona Cardinals. 4 o'clock reset.
Top stories of the day presented to you in rapid fire fashion here at 4 o'clock. We call it the 4 o'clock reset. It's what we do every day on the Burns and Gambo show. Going to start and end with news from the Arizona Cardinals. Starting with the news. The Cardinals have ruled out linebacker Dennis Gardeck, one of their top special teams guy, and obviously somebody who racked up a bunch of sacks and not a lot of opportunities last year. He's out for Sunday's game due to a hand injury. This comes on the heels of Gardeck working his way back from a torn ACL. Here's Cliff.
Yeah, he had an injury yesterday, so he won't play this weekend.
Could Dennis possibly miss multiple weeks?
Possibly. Yeah.
Possible multiple weeks, and Gardeck is trying to handle it in stride.
He's a bit down, but we're hoping it's not too long. And like we've said all along, we're going to err on the side of caution, and it could be more of a blessing in disguise to really let him get healed up over the next couple of weeks, and then we'll get him back.
I was kind of wondering if he was going to play anyway, given that he was coming off of ACL surgery, you know?
Well, he was second on a team in sacks. He had 7 sacks with only 5 reps. Unbelievable, and nobody could do that. But no, I mean, he had so little reps, and he ended up with 7 sacks. And he's a special teams beast, and he's a leader on that team. And he was just so good for them last year that there was no way they weren't going to bring him back. So they made sure they got him back, and they knew. I mean, he got hurt in week 15, not week 2. So there was always the chance that he was not going to be ready or right for the first couple weeks of the season.
The Buccaneers,
but this is a hand injury. It's just keeping him out.
Yeah, it's not the knee, it's the hand. The Buccaneers beat the Cowboys last night to start the NFL regular season.
Yeah, of course they did. Whatever.
Tom Brady, under 2 minutes left. And, of course, 11-play, 57-yard drive, right on down the field. Ryan Suck up a field goal. It's his 40th fourth quarter or overtime comeback in his career. And Cliff Kingsbury was asked today how he feels about a guy who is 2 years older than he is still getting it done on the field like that.
It makes me feel very inadequate as a man. But, no, it's just phenomenal. I mean, I've seen it firsthand, the work that he puts into it and how he's dedicated his entire existence to that right there. And to still see that competitive fire that he has, it's inspiring.
It was the most predictable thing ever last night, right?
Of course. The second you give Tom Brady the ball back with a minute and 25 seconds left and all he needs is a field goal, you lost the game. I mean, you're not going to win that game. 9 out of 10 times, he's going to drive his team down and get a field goal. Look, it's unfortunate. I mean, the guy's even selling Subway commercials when he doesn't eat bread. I mean, it's Tom Brady's world, and we're all just living in it. And I believe that now. It's Tom Brady. He's selling cryptocurrency or something like that, and Subway sandwiches. And, I mean, he doesn't even eat bread. Like, it's his world, and we're just living
the
in it.
The sooner you embrace it, the better. The Big The Big 12 has officially accepted BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF as the newest members to their conference. BYU will join by the 2023 football season. The other three schools will make the move no later than the summer of 2024.
This is not just about adding members to the Big 12. This is about adding members that are additive and that bring the kinds of synergies that help UH get better and help every last member of our league get better.
It helps that they're decently sized media markets as well, and all typically pretty good at football with those four schools. So look at that. That was Bob Bellsby, by the way, the commissioner of the Big 12. The Big 12 getting aggressive, Gambo, trying to add instead of subtract.
Yeah, they want to try to remain one of the power conferences. Whether that happens or not, I don't know. It's going to be weird with 14 teams in that conference for a couple of years with Texas and Oklahoma not able to leave yet. So we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, the domino effect is now, what's the next conference that's going to go get rated?
Right.
So the AAC can survive.
That is one of the big questions, and a lot of eyes have turned to the Sun Belt Conference, as a matter of fact. We've seen a lot of conversation and chatter about that. No, by the way, the Big 12 says they will completely honor BYU's desires to not play on Sunday. And then quick news about the Diamondbacks. They're in Seattle tonight to start a weekend series with the Mariners. Seth Beer will be making his D-backs debut. He was called up for Drew Ellis.
Yeah, you know, I can't wait to see him. The best player so far that they've gotten in that Astros trade for Greinke has been Josh Rojas. He came over and we thought, okay, you super utility guy, but he's ended up proving that he is worthy of being an everyday player. Seth Beer is the last. You know, the other two were pitchers. But Seth Beer is the last guy to get called up, and we all want to see what he can do and if his bat might be able to help the Diamondbacks lineup for a while.
But our top story of the day here on the Burns and Gambo show are the Arizona Cardinals, who are going to get on the Big Bird tomorrow, fly to Nashville, Tennessee, and in a very warm stadium, they're going to take on the Tennessee Titans. Cliff Kingsbury even talked about the weather a little bit today.
No, we get plenty of heat work, you know, the last couple of weeks being outside. We know it'll be hot, it'll be humid, and I feel like we've had some similar temperatures, so I'm hoping we're prepared.
And 94 degrees is, I think, the last time we checked what we're looking at with a lot of humidity. We're going to talk in a moment, Gambo, about the Titans and this high expectation that people have of them going into this game. There aren't a lot of people picking the Arizona Cardinals, and we'll talk about that coming up in a minute. From the Cardinals' perspective, though, going up against a Titan team that is good, really, really good, Cliff Kingsbury says this game is a great measuring stick for them right out of the chute.
Particularly playing a team that has Super Bowl ambitions, has been on the rise the last couple of years and playing at an extremely high level, added one of the best players in football. So it's a great measuring stick right off the bat to kind of see where we're at and where we need to go.
Is it the kind of measuring stick you want in week one if you're the Cardinals, or would you like a little bit of a softer landing if you could for week one?
I think that I would prefer a softer landing.
Me too.
I mean, if you're saying, I mean, I would have preferred an easier game. You know, I sent something to you earlier today because I was looking. I wanted to see what, you know, where this trio, wide receivers and running backs, you know, lines up. A.J. Brown and Julio Jones and Derrick Henry. And I did. I found something on, you know, the best wide receiver running back trios in the NFL this year. Number five was Green Bay, four Tampa Bay, three Seattle, two Minnesota. Number one, Tennessee. Derrick Henry, A.J. Brown, and Julio Jones. And this is the one line that really stood out like a sore freaking thumb on this. Ready? You can make the case that Henry, Brown, and Jones is the most physically imposing combination of skill players ever put on a football field.
Ever.
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 Because Henry's 6'3", 247. Brown's 6 feet, 226. Julio's 6'3", 220. I mean, these are, you know, and that was the comment. Like, it might be the most physically imposing trio that the NFL's ever had. And they rated it number one. It's unlike, give me another trio that the Cardinals are going to face that's more brutal than this trio. They're not.
Off the top of my head, none are coming.
No. I mean, I don't see it. Now, they mentioned Seattle in here with Carson, DK Metcalf, and Tyler Lockett. You know, I mean, that's good. I mean, that's pretty good. But I mean, it's not nearly as good as. But this is the best combination of wide receivers and running backs they're going to face all year.
Yep, which is why
in week one,
which is why Cliff is calling it a great measuring stick for them. And then, of course, in the middle of it all is Ryan Tannehill. We're going to talk more about this in a sec. First, let me remind you can text us your thoughts on this game to the FanDuel text line, 620-620. It is open and available to you at all times, and we'll read the best ones on the air, as always. When we come back, we'll keep talking about this Titan team and sort of the expectations that they have going forward. You look all around the NFL, there are not a whole lot of people who believe the Cardinals can beat the Titans. Some, in fact, think it's going to be a blowout. Will it? We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. John Gambadoro, Dave Burns here on the Burns and Gambo Show. We have come full circle when it comes to the Tennessee Titans. Well, not quite full circle, but we started the week, and every story Gambo and I were reading coming out of Tennessee, and we even had a guest on who covers the Tennessee Titans for ESPN, and the conversation was themed around, man, not a lot of time for Julio Jones and Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown and that offensive line, and they haven't played a lot together in the preseason. They haven't practiced a lot together. This could be a really good time to catch the Tennessee Titans if you're the Arizona Cardinals. And here we are, and we're in the exact opposite position the closer we get to the game. Four bold predictions for the Tennessee Titans. This came courtesy of the website clutchpoints.com. And if these four bold predictions for the Titans come true, the Cardinals need not even bother showing up on Sunday, because it just makes it sound like they're going to get just floored and flattened on Sunday afternoon, and there's nothing they can do about it. Titans are going to shut down the Cardinals, and A.J. Brown and Julio Jones are going to combine for 250 yards and three touchdowns. And it just goes on and on, Gambo.
Well, before we get to that, I did see something that came out today that the Titans have just placed their kicker on the injury report with a groin muscle problem.
Okay.
So that, you know, that could be a big deal, right? I mean, you know, he had been their kicker, Sam Ficken, he was limited Friday, and they put him on the injured list. So they also signed their kicker named Michael Badgley to the practice squad. They waived an offensive lineman. So we'll just keep our eye on that. We'll keep our eye on the kicker thing to see if that affects the Titans or not, because their kicker's on the injured list. Could affect kickoffs and field goals, long field goals and stuff like that. So just something to keep your eye on, because if it's a close game, you know how field goal kickers can play a big dividend in that.
If it's a close game. And there's still – look, I don't know that much about this website. I'm not going to sit here and say I know exactly what's going to happen on Sunday. I do know that the Tennessee Titans, and you were just talking about it in the segment a second ago, that the Tennessee Titans, offensively, they're loaded. Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown and Julio Jones and Ryan Tannehill, who's been at the center of it, they can put up points in a hurry. And I do believe if the Cardinals are going to have a chance in this game on Sunday, they too are going to have to put up points in a hurry. But to read the way some people are predicting this, and the way, you know, everybody gives their predictions on a Friday, there's not a lot of belief out there kind of nationally, quite frankly, that the Cardinals have much of a chance in this game on Sunday. Even though the point spread is only 3 points, perceptually, the way people are picking this game, Gambo, I'm not seeing a lot of Cardinal love for Sunday when it comes to their chances of winning this football game.
Well, you had something that you sent me, NFL.com's predictions, and it was 10 people on NFL.com. They all predicted the Titans would win, all of them. Now, the first guy was 1 point, 7 points, 10 points, 1 point, 2 point, 1 point, 4 points, 4 points, 4 points, 7 and 8. So only one of them had them winning by more than one score. Out of all of those,
yeah, it was. You're right. No, I'm looking at the same thing. It was
just
Colleen
one
Wolf. Colleen Wolf was the only one who said that it would be a double digit. And that's our poll question. We'll get to in a minute. She is the only one who thought it would be. So they're all saying it's going to be close, but none of them are picking the Arizona Cardinals to win the game.
I mean, I guess what defines close is anything within one score. That to me, that's close.
Yes.
So double digit wins, maybe that's not so close, but a one score game. I mean, if you're down 28-20 in the fourth quarter, that's a close game. You're in it. You get a turnover, or you get the ball, and you score in two-point conversion, you tie it up. So I think anything that's within one score is considered a close game. Now, look, you could be up by 7, and then you tack on a field goal, you win by 10. That's still a close game, right? I mean, it just depends on how the game ends. But what you were talking about earlier is just the belief that they can blow them out. That if somebody, like if we said, hey, if one of these teams is going to blow out the other, which one are you taking? I think we all take Tennessee. If we just said, hey, you got to pick one to win by blowout. A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, and these four bold predictions that Clutch Points did, one of the things they said was that A.J. Brown and Julio Jones combined for 250 receiving yards and 3 touchdowns.
I know. Yeah, that would be that'd be a pretty good game. And then Ryan Tannehill, here's another bold prediction from the same website. Ryan Tannehill has a near-perfect game. Bold prediction one, Derrick Henry takes an early lead on the rushing title. And look, I get it. I understand. Tennessee's a good football team, and I talking about reading stories, man, I read one today on The Athletic about how the anticipation in Tennessee is, and there was one person, Teresa Walker of the Associated Press, who has covered the Titans for their entire Nashville history, said this is the most anticipated season of Titans football she has witnessed since 2008. And the story goes on to paint this picture, and I wasn't really aware of this because I haven't paid a ton of attention to Titans football other than when they're on. But in Tennessee, apparently, because Nashville is such a destination location, a lot of people go there to watch their team play the Titans because they want to visit Nashville while they're there. Okay. And so typically you'll see the stands there filled with the fans from the visiting teams because they're there to hang out in Nashville for a weekend and then go watch a football game on Sunday. Apparently, all of that changed when they got Julio Jones. And the story is all about the anticipation, how they sold out of jerseys, how they sold out of seats, how they sold out of tickets, all because, like, the success they've had under Mike Vrabel and then the addition of Julio Jones kind of woke that typically college football town up to the fact that they've got a really good NFL team in town. And because of that and the weather, the Cardinals could be walking into a very potentially hostile, fired-up environment on Sunday. It's something to think about when it comes to Sunday's game.
Yeah, and the difference between the Titans getting Julio Jones now compared to the Cardinals getting DeAndre Hopkins is that the Cardinals got Hopkins. They weren't a good football team. And the Titans got Julio Jones, and they're good.
Yep.
Like, they were a playoff team. When the Cardinals got DeAndre Hopkins, there was a lot of excitement and energy, but it wasn't that he was coming to a playoff team and that he could have been the missing piece.
Well, and think about it, too. Think about it this way, too. When the Cardinals got DeAndre Hopkins, it was a year ago, right? Mm-hmm. There were no fans in the stands. So there was no energy in the building to kind of help you. You know, there was a football team, and it made them better. But in terms of a football team feeding off the energy of the fans, you couldn't. There wasn't anybody there. Now you're going to have a full house. The place is going to be packed. And if you were, you know, a believer in the Titans before and now you go out and get Julio Jones, I would think that building has the potential to be electric on Sunday, depending on how well they fill it and what kind of the mood of the place is in there.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why it's a tough game for the Cardinals to win. I'm not expecting that they're going to win. If they do, I think we have a whole new storyline on Monday.
Yes.
I do. If they win a game like that against a playoff caliber team, a team that's expected to, you know, compete for a Super Bowl, that's a huge win. I mean, and that will go a long way towards, you know, our belief that this team is legitimate.
Yeah, and look, like I said before, the spread, it's only 3 points, so it's not, like, overwhelming. And you noted the fact that a lot of those predictive scores were kind of close for this game. But you're right, perceptually, if the Cardinals can come back, this might be one of their toughest road games, if not the toughest road game they'll play all year long. If they can come back right out of that week one with a win, it's probably going to change our perceptions of what we think the Cardinals are capable of this year. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, he is the last piece of the Zach Greinke puzzle to make his major league debut. What should we expect out of Seth Beer this weekend for the Diamondbacks? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo show. We'll talk Diamondbacks baseball in a minute. First, let's because it's 4:30 and it's what we do at 4:30, let's update our Twitter poll question of the day. Mitch is back with us here on the Burns and Gambo show.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update presented by Sanderson Ford.
Expectations for this weekend, Mitch? That's what we're asking everybody.
Simply put, Cardinals, Titans, how are you predicting the outcome? Cardinals win big, they win close, or Titans win big, or they win close?
And we define close as
close
within
as a one
possession.
Yeah. Yes.
I've got, I hate to say it, I think the Titans win by more than one possession. I do. I think that's what's going to happen.
I got Titans winning too. Probably close or one score game, but I got the Titans winning.
Mitch?
The audience still optimistic that the Cardinals will win this one, although close. 44.9%. Titans win close, the next closest at 32.7%. Titans win big, 15.4. Cardinals win big, 7.1.
You can vote on the Twitter poll question at Burns and Gambo. One word on social media is where you can find us.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo talk Diamondbacks baseball with a D-backs broadcaster, The Booth.
It's a fact check. I'm back. You're back.
Presented by Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi, the official wine of Major League Baseball.
It's our weekly visit with a member of the Diamondbacks broadcast crew, and for this week, we've got one of our favorites who's on with us, the play-by-play voice on Bally Sports Arizona. It's been a while since I've talked to him, so it's good to have him on the show, Steve Berthume, who joins us live here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. Bert, how you doing?
Burns, you guys are so nice. It's just such a friendly, happy show.
We are.
It is. I talk to you more often because I like to text you and bother you during the broadcast. I apologize.
I've noticed that, actually.
Yeah, I do apologize.
Whereas I respect your professional and personal space, Bert, and I would never dream of texting you in the middle
Burnsy,
of the broadcast.
I was going to text you on your Montana vacation because I was very jealous. I love Montana.
Oh, my gosh.
I rode my bike across Montana 20 years ago. And
no way!
Did you go through the Going Through the Sun Road? Did you ride your bike there?
No, I actually after the bike ride, I did drive up there to Glacier and do that. Whoa. No, we rode from it was a charity ride. We rode from Missoula to Billings in 6 days.
Oh,
it was awesome.
Wow, that's stretch.
Are you going to do that again once the D-back season ends in 3 weeks?
You know what? Right now, physically, Gambo, I feel like I've ridden across the country twice backwards.
There's got to be something. I mean, do you go on a vacation somewhere? I mean, when that season ends on October 3rd, whenever it is, I mean, there's got to be something to unwind from this miserable year.
My goal is to not leave the house for 5 months.
5 months?
Yes, that's what happens. I collapse on the couch for like a solid 2 to 3 weeks because physically, even without the travel, it just eats you up. I feel like 1,000 pounds of chewed up bubble gum right now, but that's part of the gig. It's fine. But the problem is then once my season ends, my wife's season begins. She starts doing her college basketball and her softball, so she'll go all the way through spring training doing games.
So it's hi and goodbye with Cindy and that's that. For you, and you're doing such great work every single night, still delivering Diamondbacks baseball to us and trying to make it entertaining and trying to make it watchable. For you, what have you seen over the last 11, 12 games? Because it looked like they had kind of pulled themselves out of it and were back into the, all right, everything's somewhat okay kind of phase. And then the last 2 weeks, it's just gone south in such a hurry. What's from your perspective, what's been the difference, Bert?
I think talent. I think it's just sometimes it comes down to that. You're playing, Burnsy, a lot of teams. Like this schedule now, just about every series we have now, with the exception of the Rockies at the tail end, these teams it's life and death for the teams we're playing. They're all in the postseason race. Like tonight, Seattle is 2 games out of a wild card spot. They're dead even with Oakland. Every game is the Super Bowl with these guys with about 20 games left for all the teams we're playing. So you get the Dodgers twice, you get the Giants. We're up against a very good Seattle team again right now. So I just think we played a lot of good teams, and it's just talent. We're at that low tide point where we're coming off one group of players and we're transitioning into another core group of players that's going to be here very soon. They're already starting to get here. And I think this is just that low point in between, and that's to be expected, I think, with any organization.
Well, I'm as excited about Seth Beer as I think I've been for any of the guys called up. And I mean, I'm going to read something to you. It'll just take a second. This is back when they made the trade. This was the scouting report on Beer I got from the Astros. I contacted the Astros, and they gave me something on Martin and Buscaskis and Rojas. But here's what they said about Beer, and I just want to get your opinions. Can really hit but limited defensively. Funky swing, but will hit in the big leagues with some power. Great kid, easy to root for. Will have a good personality with the Beer jerseys and stuff. Probably first baseman, designated hitter only, but has played a little outfield. Little surprised he was traded because he's an American League-style player, but his power is really good. What's your thoughts on what your expectations are for the last player to make it to the majors from that Astros trade?
I think, Gambo, he's the last player because of a few circumstances. As you said, it's mostly first base DH. I got to see him actually play a fair amount of first base during summer camp in the alt site last year, because when Bob and I were in here doing games and the Diamondbacks were on the road, they were playing the games in front of us on the field here at the ballpark. So we got to watch a lot of these guys. He's a little bit challenged defensively. There's just no getting around that. Now, I haven't seen him play any defense this year. He might be much improved. I think if we get the DH next year, and I anticipate that we will, he's a good candidate to be the DH. Everyday. He's a left-hand power bat. If you look at his freshman year at Clemson, he was one of the best hitters in the country. And by the time he left Clemson, which is a big-time program, he had nearly twice as many walks as strikeouts. So he's got everything.
Year, right?
He's got everything they like. Left-hand bat, power bat, very good strike zone organization. He's been a little blocked here by, you know, some of the first basemen we've had. Christian Walker had a 29 home run season 2 years ago. There was no room for him then or last year. Now there might be some changes here. I don't know how he fits into the equation with Pavin Smith playing first base, I presume, next year. We'll see. But if we get a DH, I would put him in that spot on opening day.
Steve Berthume, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo show. When you're broadcasting these games, and when I'm watching these games, Gambo's watching these games, I think a lot of us are still looking at the team, looking at the roster, and we're looking for usable parts? Who's going to have a role? Who's going to be a part of the next good team? From your perspective, are you seeing usable parts moving forward based off of the roster as it's in front of you right now?
Oh, gosh, yeah. The question then becomes, how will they be used? Like, you know, Mike Farron and I have this ongoing debate about the need to develop versatility, and that's how Tampa Bay wins. That's how the Giants win in a lesser regard. There's a lot of teams that do that. I wonder, as you try to develop versatility, do you slow overall development? I don't know what the answer to that is. I'd like to see, just personally, guys play more consistent spots. Like Varsho catches one day, and then in the middle of the next game, he goes out to center field, and sure enough, the first ball's a line drive hit to him in center. He gets a bad read. He comes in. The ball goes over his head, and you go, oh, what are we doing? I don't know the answer to that. These guys are way smarter than I am, but there's a lot of usable parts. There's no doubt about that. Pavin Smith, Josh Rojas. I mean, Henry Ramos is in the starting lineup tonight. That guy might have a role on the team next year. He's a 29-year-old rookie. He switch hits. He plays corner outfield. There might be a spot for him next year. Absolutely. I love what I've seen from Jake McCarthy. He's really fun to watch. Can Andrew Young be an everyday second baseman in the major leagues? Starting to maybe think he can. So I see a lot of usable parts, a lot of things to move forward with. The question is, where do they get used?
You know, I think you come back, you know, with Bumgarner, with Gallen, and with Merrill Kelly. And the big question for me, and I just, you know, I hate when a guy's been here for a number of years and I don't know what they have. I don't know what they have in Luke Weaver. I really don't. I mean, he's been here for a while. He's dealt with the injuries. There are times he looks unbelievable, and there are other times that, you know, that he doesn't. And it's just one of those. He's one of the hardest guys for me to figure out.
I agree. He's a different pitcher now today than he has been since he's been here. And the reason I say that is, one, he's healthy. He's had two fairly significant injuries the last 2 years. And now they finally got him to get away from the mentality that I'm a starting pitcher, I need to have four or five pitches. If you look at what the Giants have done with Gosman and DeSclafani, like there's that old Derek Johnson is the Reds pitching coach, and he tells all his guys, be great at what you're good at. Like, Luke Weaver has a really good fastball and a really good changeup. That's enough. You know, it'd be occasionally he has an effective curveball. He has, in the past, sort of tried to force a cutter, and that's where he gets himself into trouble. But the Luke Weaver we've seen the last couple of starts, Gambo, 94-95, good fastball command, very effective changeup, occasional curveball. It works.
Hang in there, Bert. We're rooting for you. We're rooting for you.
I know you guys are.
I know it's a tough season. I was the host of Diamond Talk when they lost 111 games back in 2004.
The Al Patrique Show!
There you go. That's your fault, Burns.
Yeah, it was.
The Al Patrique Show was Burnsy's.
I got to host the Al Patrique Show.
How was that?
Oh, it was the Al Patrique Show.
It sells itself, doesn't it?
That kind of stuff just does. It sells itself. So
it does.
I understand truly the pain of how difficult it can be to try to, and you guys do such a good job of trying to make it still entertaining and engaging every night, even though it's pacing the way it is. So keep up the good hard work. You're almost there. We appreciate the time so much, and hopefully we can catch up with a cold one sometime in the off season. Okay?
I look forward to it. Thank you guys for having me. We're having a good time watching the kids, so we're optimistic about the future. So there are reasons to watch, no doubt.
Good stuff.
All Steve Berthiaume. You got it, Bert.
Thanks, you guys.
Steve Berthiaume from Bally Sports Arizona, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show. The D-backs taking on the Mariners tonight. When we come back, college football is on the agenda. ASU, kind of a sloppy mess a week ago against Southern Utah, but it wasn't too much of an issue because it was Southern Utah. Can they clean up things tomorrow to prevent an upset against UNLV, or can they still afford to be sloppy? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. John Gambadero, Dave Burns, the Burns and Gambo Show. We're live from the Auction Community Studios. If you're talking about ASU football's game against UNLV tomorrow night, 7:30 kickoff, the thing about it is that they probably, what, they have 13 penalties, right, against Southern Utah? They were just a mess?
11 in the first half.
Okay.
11.
They can probably still play like that against UNLV, and it probably won't matter that much in the final analysis. They're a 34.5-point favorite.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, you know, for being honest about it, this is not the game you'd need your very best or to be your most perfect.
But to not get in the habit of having all these penalties, though, for when you play some real teams?
100% agree. You've got to prepare yourself for when you start playing some real teams, and that kind of starts tomorrow night against UNLV, who do tout a really good running back, and if there's one element about this game that makes you a little nervous, it's got to be stopping him because he's very good.
Yeah, there's no doubt that Charles Williams is the guy that you've got to worry about. I mean, he's a dynamic running back, and he's very capable of having a big game against you. So, you know, that's the thing. I mean, he can make you pay time and time again. He's a dynamic back. He's one of the nation's most accomplished backs. He's got over 3,000 yards and 21 touchdowns, and he's just a solid player. I mean, solid player. Had 177 yards rushing last week. So that's the thing you're looking at. I mean, that's the one guy that could give you some problems, but I imagine you gear up to stop the run, and you want them to pass the ball. So I imagine that all their emphasis will be on shutting him down.
Yeah, I would think so. He is good. Over 3,000 yards for his career. But UNLV, like I say, they 34.5 point underdog. And really, if you look at the schedule as a whole for the Pac-12, this is kind of a somewhat of an unusual game for the conference this weekend, because the conference is involved in a number of high-profile, non-conference games. ASU's is not one of them. They've got theirs next week against BYU, and they take on Utah this week. BYU making their run through the Pac-12, apparently. It was U of A last week, Utah this week, ASU next week. So not to put ASU on the side, but their tougher work is coming in the weeks to come for the conference. Man, it's Oregon, Ohio State. It's Washington, Michigan. It's Colorado, Texas A&M. It's Cal, TCU. Big-time games, big-time opponents. And a big-time chance, really, for the conference this weekend to atone, for lack of a better word, for how poorly the North did last week, to kind of see where they stand nationally, and none bigger than Oregon versus Ohio State.
Yeah, that's the one we're looking at, right? Because, you know, do we believe in Ohio State and C.J. Stroud? I watched them against Minnesota, not impressed. Thought Minnesota could have won that game. Minnesota's running back, the one that got hurt and is out for the year, was having a field day running all over them. Minnesota had 200 yards rushing against Ohio State. So I was not that impressed. And Oregon's got two good running backs, C.J. Verdi and Travis Dye. They've got two good running backs. So I think that it's going to be very difficult for Oregon, which has never beaten Ohio State. They played them 9 times. They've never beaten them. The last time they played them, 2014, National championship game. That was the Ohio State team with Ezekiel Elliott and Cordell Jones, and Ohio State dumped them. So I don't think they go into Ohio Stadium and win. I don't think they do. But if they did, coming off the UCLA win against LSU,
yep,
you would start to have to give a lot of credit to this conference. Like, I don't think that the UCLA win alone did it, for the simple fact that, I mean, how many bad losses were there for the Pac-12 this week? So that, I think if the Pac-12 would have had a normal week and UCLA beats LSU, oh, okay. But because the Pac-12 North did so badly, I think the UCLA win doesn't, you know, stand alone on its own.
Yeah.
I think you need another win somewhere. It could come with Oregon and Ohio State.
I would agree. John Wilner, our buddy from the San Jose Mercury News, leading Pac-12 insider. We obviously cite his work a lot here on the Burns and Gambo show. He wrote about the weekend to be for the Pac-12, and he points out that the Pac-12 has not beaten a non-conference regular season team in the top 10 since Stanford beat Notre Dame in 2017. So it's been 4 years since this happened there. If you take Notre Dame out of the equation, because obviously they play Stanford and USC just about every year, take them out of the equation, the last time a Pac-12 team beat a top 10 team in the regular season that wasn't the Fighting Irish, you have to go back to 2014 when Oregon beat 7th-ranked Michigan State. So yeah, it is an opportunity, and they've got a couple chances this week at it, with Oregon at Ohio State, Colorado not as likely probably to beat 5th-ranked Texas A&M, but they do have a couple of shots this weekend to sort of recalibrate their position among the nation's elite. And for Oregon, it's a huge opportunity to say, oh no, we do in fact belong in this conversation. As flawed as Ohio State might be, they're still loaded with a lot of talented football players, and to win that game on the road would be a big, big notch in the belt for Oregon.
If Kayvon Thibodeau doesn't play, and even if he's limited, that really hurts their ability. He's one of the most dominant players in all of college football. So when he got hurt with that ankle injury, that was really devastating. Now, a lot of people thought Oregon got caught looking ahead to Ohio State, and that's why they played so poorly last week. I mean, maybe that's the case. You know, against Fresno State, because they certainly did not play that well, but they came out on top and they won. And they kind of, you know, maybe they were lucky to win, but a lot of people think that maybe it was, maybe they got caught looking ahead because they were focused on Ohio State.
Yeah, and when I was talking about big non-conference games, it got minimized because Washington lost to Montana, but Washington at Michigan is, it's like I say, it got minimized a little bit because neither of these teams are ranked right now, but certainly a little bit of a chance for redemption if Washington can go on the road and win the Big House against the Wolverines. U of A, on the other hand, this is the home opener for Jed Fish's crew. And again, citing the work of our buddy John Wilner, he points out that Jed Fish is U of A's eighth head coach since the school joined what was then the Pac-8 back in 1978. Only three of the head coaches won their home opener. John Makovic, Mike Stoops, and Rich Rod.
John Makovic won a game at U of A.
I know. It's
do you even, like, honestly, like, they had a mutiny.
They did.
They had a mutiny. They were like, the entire team, we will quit if this guy is the head coach.
They stormed the president's office.
They did. They had a mutiny. I've never seen that before. Like, hey, you're not going to have a college football program if this guy's the head coach. Do you remember that?
Oh, very. Yeah.
Man.
They stormed the president's house. They're not the president of the United States, but like the president of the university. They marched down the student mall, and they had a big thing outside his house. It's crazy. It's absolutely nuts.
It was crazy.
Yeah. That's good stuff. So Jed Fish, and he's been active too, man. He's been on social media. He's like, we got to come. We got to represent. We need the students to show up. We want to pack the place. Jed Fish, I'll give him credit, man. He's brought a lot of energy to that program. I don't think they're going to be any good this year, but he's starting to kind of turn some things a little bit with the recruiting, and he brings a ton of energy to that job, trying to get people down there involved in that program for sure.
I think he's going to do a good job. I mean, listen, we don't know. It's very, very early. They played tough, one-score game against BYU last week. They haven't won in almost 2 years. They haven't won a football game in almost 2 years. They've lost 13 straight games. So it's not about this year. The only thing he wants to do is be competitive. Be competitive. Let people see that they fight hard and they play hard. And then, you know, hopefully kids will want to come play for them.
The Cardinals home opener coming up next Sunday. And we're giving you the chance to be there for the return of the Red Sea. What you need to do is text the word Red Sea right now to 620-620. Then listen for your name starting on Monday. 7:35 in the morning, 1:35 in the afternoon, and then with us at 3:35. And you could win a pair of tickets to the home opener, plus one very lucky grand prize winner will also get an autographed Kyler Murray jersey, courtesy of Pristine Auction. Again, text the word Red Sea to 620-620. For the most part, he has flown under the radar during the Cardinals preseason, but now that the regular season is here, the impact of Rodney Hudson should be felt starting Sunday. We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.